Welcome to Tourism Media Mayhem, the podcast attempting to sweep the leg that is marketing for destinations.
Sweep. So we're taking it down.
We're taking it down as in conquering marketing. Do you know what that's from, Josh?
Karate Chop.
How did you know before we talked about that, though?
What? Is it from something called Karate Chop?
Ah, see, okay, he doesn't know. Adam, our producer, was like, this is from Karate Kid, and I bet Josh knows it, and you don't, and I didn't either.
I should know it.
You should.
But I don't.
Well, apparently we both should know it, so we both failed that one. Moving on, though, we have a very exciting episode planned today. We are talking about Sedona, Arizona, a very special location that has a really unique marketing challenge and situation currently. We have here with us today Candace Karstraus, the president and CEO of the Sedona Chamber of Commerce and Tourism Bureau. Welcome, Candace.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's so nice to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you found yourself in tourism and at Sedona.
Absolutely. Love to share a little insight. Well, how I found myself in tourism is a bit of a mirror of where we find ourselves today in the tourism industry. Back when 9/11 happened, I was working for the Washington Redskins, now the Washington football team, and found myself laid off as a result of the terrorist attacks of 9/11. And wound up having an amazing experience of going to work for Destination DC, which is our nation's capital marketing bureau,
nice.
to bring tourists back to Washington following those events. So never in my wildest dreams did I imagine that I would live personally or professionally to see such negative events impact the tourism industry again, let alone what we're predicting it should be 9 times. More negatively impacting our industry. But that's what really set me on my path in tourism. I've also had the wonderful opportunity to work abroad for a wonderful Copenhagen, the tourism bureau for the capital region over there in Denmark, and doing a funding study, which, that F word, not the F word that everyone thinks, but the
I know that one.
the funding F word, that we're always struggling with. And again, we're seeing come through today with where we are with impacted destinations of funding. So got to work over there a bit and came back to the United States to work for the Big Sky Chamber of Commerce and visit Big Sky in Montana, which is not only a world-renowned ski hill with Big Sky Resort, which just opened over Thanksgiving weekend, but it also sits at the western entrance to America's first national park. So a lot of similarities between my previous destination where I spent 4 years doing a lot of management, very similar to what I'm doing here with the impacts on our infrastructure of our small mountain community, and was persuaded to come from 10 months of winter to 10 months of summer.
Well, no one blames you for that.
Yeah. I'm looking out at amazingly beautiful blue skies and 70 degree weather right now, and having just spent Thanksgiving in Montana where it's freezing and they're praying for snow. It is quite a difference.
Yes.
But I had gone to Arizona State University back in my college days for a summer because I had family that lived out here and had traveled here on vacation with my family as a young child. My father brought me to Sedona, my sister and my mom when I was about 12, and just fell in love with this place. And his whole life really tried to work to move us here. It didn't happen. However, as we like to call it, there are such things as Sedona moments. And so when this job came up and the recruiter called me about the position, and my sister lives in Tempe and has for 7 years down in the greater valley in Phoenix.
Okay.
I felt it was destiny knocking on my door to finally bring me to Sedona. So here I am. Awesome. And I landed February 1st of this past year. And I always like to say it feels like dog years. So I've only been here about a year, but it feels like seven.
It feels like seven. I know that is. Wow, what an incredible background. You've worked so many different places, I'm sure. I'm really excited to hear just more from you and all the awesome places that that you worked.
Thanks.
So tell us more about just Sedona and why it is so incredible. I've heard a lot from Josh. I know he just came to visit, loved it, talked my ears off about it, made me really want to come. but tell us, as the expert of Sedona, more about why it's so incredible.
Absolutely. I wouldn't call myself an expert yet, though. As a recent transplant, like I said, I have a lot of my own destination still to explore.
Sure.
However, you know, what everyone leads with when I was telling folks that I'd taken a new position, oh, where are you going? Where are you headed? And you say Sedona, and just the expression that that takes over people when you say that out loud, they're just like, oh, Sedona. Mm-hmm. And we have been called the most beautiful place on earth, but it's really more about how that beauty makes you as an individual feel. And it makes everyone feel differently. And you know, bringing in some of our idea of our spiritual health and wellness and well-being with our vortices and the energy here in Sedona, it is really about how that energy impacts you. When you see the red rocks and the sandstone coming up out of the earth all around you with this beautiful blue sky. And like I said, being in Big Sky, Montana, it is a place of tremendous natural beauty as well. However, it's a different sense of how that beauty strikes you here in Sedona. That's what differentiates Big Sky, Montana from Sedona, Arizona. And I think it is this spiritualness, just really an introspective feeling that you get. And so not only are you looking at your surroundings, but it makes you look inside to find what's in there as well. So that's, in my personal opinion, I will say not expert opinion, but personal opinion, what has struck me about Sedona.
Well, if I can interject a little bit, I think that's what I got from my visit too. When we drove into town, it was in July of this year, and it was during like a massive monsoon storm.
Oh, goodness.
Yep. The streets were flooding and it was crazy. It was such a cool experience though, just to see that. But then when the clouds parted and you saw all of the red rock and the hills everywhere, it was really, really special. And it did, you know, my wife and I are more of the active travelers. We love to go do stuff when we go visit places, but there was something about Sedona that made you kind of want to slow down and feel the place a little bit. That sounds super corny, but it's so true.
Josh, we call it woo-woo. It's not corny. We call it woo-woo.
Woo-woo. Okay.
And, you know, yes, first of all, Mother Nature, this is really her stage here. The landscapes and how weather rolls in and out of the greater Verde Valley into Sedona. You know, we are at 4,500 feet here. You come up from the valley in Phoenix, you mm-hmm. 3,000 feet, 3,500 feet in the Verde Valley, and you hit us. And then you go all the way up to Flagstaff, where you're at 7,500 feet. So just this bowl that we live in, these microcosms of weather as it moves through, and not only the storms and the monsoons, but our fire season, but also our dark skies. We are a dark sky certified city, and you can see the Milky Way. Mm-hmm. We do actually get snow, believe it or not. When I started in February of this year, we had 2 weekends of snow, which was crazy. Totally shuts down the entire community because we have no snow removal equipment. But and we are an outdoor recreation destination, but it is how you plug into nature that helps you reset, rewind, kind of reboot yourself and what rejuvenates you and really fills your soul. That's what we say, is that Sedona is very soulful and her soul touches your soul when you come.
I think that's really true. My wife's going to kill me for saying this, but she's definitely, I got to tell a little story. So she's not the type to sit still. Like, she's bad at doing nothing. I love her, but that's not one of her skills. And so we went to the Airport Hill Vortex.
Yes.
And we did the hike and then we stopped at the vortex at the end, and the hike was beautiful just because of the views, the 360 mm-hmm. kind of view of the valley that you get. But then we sat there at the vortex for at least a solid half hour, and she didn't say a thing.
Wow.
She just took it all in. And that that speaks to something, because she never does that.
So I hope you took some crystals home with you to maybe replicate that experience when you need it.
Josh is like, here, Emily, here's a crystal. I think you could use this right now.
we We actually did stop in a couple of crystal shops. And
good.
I was amazed at the number of psychics. There's got to be a stat somewhere about psychic per capita.
Yes. I don't know. You guys have to be setting a record. I will investigate. I came from the land of more cows per capita, so maybe I have more psychics per capita here. I will look into it.
Yeah, I'd love to see that stat. But anyway, super special place. We loved it.
Terrific.
So moving on, Candace.
Okay.
You guys have an awesome destination. Clearly, people want to go there. I contributed to that this summer. It's my understanding that you guys are in a very unique situation, and I could spill the beans, but I kind of wanted you to talk about where Sedona is now in its ability to market tourism, and kind of, I know you just arrived in February, but how Sedona got to this place.
Absolutely. Happy to talk about that. So we have hit the pause button on marketing here in Sedona. That's kind of how we talk about it. We are partners with the city of Sedona in our tourism bureau function, and our city council members, in listening to our residents, really feel that our need to communicate out about our destination is not our top priority right now. That our priority is really as a destination management organization. And in my professional opinion, that's actually evolved to a destination mitigation organization function, because you can't manage what you don't control.
Wait, so Candace, you're saying that you're not allowed to market the destination to potential visitors right now?
Yes, sir.
That's wild.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting mindset as a tourism bureau. Yes.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I think the word marketing gets a bad rap. It's become a cuss word in destinations that have this tension between local community members and impact on our infrastructure, because it's this umbrella term. And in the past, marketing wasn't as sophisticated as it is now. However, with new technologies, geofencing, social media marketing, we can get very finite in who we're speaking to and what we're speaking to them about. And so I do feel that the word marketing gets a bad rap, and it's all inclusive when it doesn't need to be. And there are different types of marketing. There's inspirational marketing, there's invitational marketing, but then there's educational marketing. And where we've really evolved to is we need to be speaking to the 3+ million people who are coming here a year, and we have high repeat visitation. We're also just only a 2 hours drive from the fastest growing metropolitan in the nation. Phoenix, for the fourth year in a row, is adding like nearly 250 people a day. And so they see us as their backyard. So we know they're coming. So the ability to speak to behavioral expectations, to respect and protect this special place, is critical. And so it's kind of like, I always draw the analogy is, it's the holidays, right? Let's say you're going to have a party at the house for the holiday season. Do you shout out from the rooftops, "Hey, party at my house, here's the address," and just wait and see who shows up? Or do you say, "Okay, it's the holidays. I would really love to have some of my dear friends and family here who align with my values, I enjoy spending time with, that respect my home when they come, you know, are the type of people I want to be with and who care about me and my well-being." And so right now we're just, I always say to my kids, you get what you get and don't throw a fit if you're not specific. And so right now we're just getting what we get and we're throwing a fit. Because when I landed in February, tourism equaled traffic, trash, trailhead congestion, and tension among place consumers from hikers, mountain bikers, ATV, OHVs, and equestrians. So it's job security, I guess. I got a lot of work to do.
That's true. Yeah. It's just different than a traditional destination marketer might be prepared to deal with. So, okay, how did Sedona get to this place?
So back in 2016, we were already starting to see increased visitation in the marketplace. And that really came about as a result of funding. You know, we were talking offline a little earlier that I think that word funding is the other F word. that it really drives a lot of things. And so as we saw monies in partnership with the city of Sedona through our bed tax allocation growing, we were able to tell more people about us. We also had the advent of the internet and that exponential growth with Instagram and other social media channels that have made our destination, a world-renowned destination online. And so we embarked on our sustainable tourism plan in partnership with Arizona State University's sustainable tourism program, as well as Mitch Nichols Tourism Group and the City of Sedona, which was adopted in March of 2019. Because we saw that if we didn't start to look at what was potentially going to happen to us and plan for it and prepare for it, then we would be overcome. Sure. So the pandemic, unfortunately, kind of hit the fast forward button and exacerbated that growth. That, as we saw over the past year, 18 million new visitors to our forests across the country. We here in Sedona are completely encapsulated by public lands in the Coconino National Forest. Actually, almost more than, I believe it's more than 50% of the city of Sedona itself is public lands.
Wow.
And so our buffer of our wild land interface with our residential communities is non-existent. So again, there are multiple things that are contributing to that heightened tension. And that's really, really we find ourselves right now. Highest grossing fiscal year ever since the city was founded in 1988 during a global pandemic.
That's so crazy. You literally the exact opposite of every other destination.
Well, there are some other destinations that are similar to us. They're outdoor recreation destinations, those that provide access to our public lands. And part of the issue that I always like to talk about, too, is those public lands, having lived abroad, and you talk about our national park system and our four U.S. forests, and people abroad are really envious of that truly American ideal. You know, Ken Burns in his documentary about our national parks talks about that. It's America's best idea. And those public lands belong to all of us. Our tax dollars fund the care and upkeep of those lands. And so just because I live in closer proximity gives me more right to those lands. You know, that conversation is one that I try to dispel that myth on a daily basis, so that our lands are, they're owned by all of us. And so how do we really make it so that we can all continue to recreate on them with all the folks we've got coming out? So it's funny, 5 years ago, mere 5 years ago, there was talk of, oh my gosh, how are we going to support our public lands? Mm-hmm. People aren't going. I mean, the National Park System actually ran a program, in picking your park and finding your favorite park that has become wildly successful. And so who would have thought that we would find ourselves on the exact opposite side of that pendulum in a mere 5 years' time?
Right. Yeah. And like you said, COVID definitely contributed to that acceleration for sure. You know, like I try to believe in the best in people, but I also have to work with Sasha, so I know not everyone's perfect. And so I'm assuming that a lot of the tension that you're referencing that's coming between visitors and residents is due to disrespect of the national forest and the surrounding areas, and probably disrespect of the town and disrespect of locals. Do you have any horror stories you could share? I mean, I could tell a few about Sasha, but...
As could I about Josh. We'll swap in a while.
Yeah. No, I don't believe in horror flicks. I personally hate Halloween horror stories because I don't like being alone at night after I watch them. But, you know, where we really find ourselves, we've just recently launched a much deeper partnership with Leave No Trace and the Center of Outdoor Ethics. We've also just partnered with Tread Lightly, which is the comparable national nonprofit organization for motorized recreation, which just moved its headquarters from Utah to Arizona. So we're super happy to have that resource here locally in state. And then we, during the pandemic, in addition to our Safe, Clean, Ready campaign with our businesses to ensure, you know, to our visitors that we were following safety protocols, we also launched the Sedona Cares Pledge, which talks about the respecting and protecting this place, because we have seen everything from the trash along our Verde River watershed of dirty diapers and just tons and tons and tons of trash. Again, COVID with the need to wrap every single utensil and piece of food and keep, you know, is compounding that problem. But you really have to ask yourselves, I'm a mom. Actually, my son is 17 years old today.
Nice.
Yes, Hunter. Happy birthday, Hunter. But you're like, who raised these people that they just throw their trash all over the place, and people defecating on our riverbed and not drinking water when they go out on a 4-mile hike in 100 degrees, and therefore having to have search and rescue come and get them out of. So the impact on our public services, our public safety, search and rescue, police, the fire district, with some of our folks also who come with ATVs, you know, this is a big issue for us. We have a tremendous amount of motorized recreation here in our greater landscape, and folks who just think this is a place for them to come do donuts and it's irrelevant of what they do and how they behave, and then have a rollover and have to be rescued and medbacked out of here. This is all inappropriate. So I don't know what mamas raised these kids, but it's not how I've raised mine, to be respectful of place and people and community. So we are working very diligently on that. There was the huge also a few years ago, you know, wave of, oh, I want to live like a local, right? Yes. I want to live like a local. Well, you know, we're asking folks, well, then be a good neighbor when you come. If you want to live like a local, be a good neighbor. And our people who live here treat this place with respect, and it's sacred, and it's just sacrilege of what's happening by folks who are coming here to recreate.
That's a great way to frame it. I love that. I don't know if I would have come up with that. I'm not very creative, but I like that a lot, because there really is like a desire from at least people of my generation to travel and experience a place like the locals do. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you should treat it like for their neighbors. So yeah. That's cool. Yeah. So talk a bit about the pledge, if you will. I've always been kind of curious how well those things do and what kind of impact they have. And I'd love to hear what you've seen.
I think the adoption of the use of a QSR code through the pandemic is one positive.
Sure.
Because, you know, definitely you can't go to a restaurant now and read a menu without looking at your QSR code. So that has helped us with the pledge, get that in front of more people. Because we've put it everywhere throughout the destination. They can pull it up and read it. And really, it talks about the sacredness of this place. And it includes the 7 principles of leave no trace and packing in it, packing it out, staying on the trail, just a myriad of different things. Being respectful of the land, being respectful in the neighborhoods. As I mentioned, there is no buffer between our public lands and our residential communities. So 4 of our 5 major trails are accessed through subdivisions. So if you're driving an ATV through a subdivision, you don't gun your engine and rev your music up to like 20 decibels so that everyone and their mother can hear it. It's be respectful. You can be respectful. So it's all those types of messages. Also about our watershed, and clean, pick up your dog poop. You know, when you take your animals out, we have a lot of animals that come and recreate with folks. We have tons of hotels that are very animal friendly, which is super fun. So we promote that and are welcoming of that. But pick up your poop, because it goes into our watershed, which feeds into our Verde River and feeds into our water system. So a lot of things like that, that maybe perhaps some of us who were brought up recreating in the outdoors take for granted. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I've actually had folks say to me, okay, so what kinds of programs are you going to go do with our schools, starting with our elementary school, to educate our kids about how to recreate responsibly? And a lot of times, you know, kids point out to their parents, hey, mom, dad, what are you doing? You're not doing it right. You know, I've had my kids do that to me on occasion. So we can maybe start at a younger age to really prepare kids to go out on our lands and what that looks like. We try to, you know, get them to do model behavior in other areas. So why not when they go into the outdoors?
Sure. Yeah. Just because you're remote maybe from a couple other people doesn't mean you should behave differently.
Mm-hmm. Well, the exodus from many of our urban areas of permanent moving to outdoor destinations, in addition to just visitation, has brought a lot of folks from major cities that aren't accustomed to living in this close of a proximity to the public lands as well. And so not only are we trying to educate our visitors, but what we found, our day trippers during COVID, because many of our neighboring states, like California, for example, during the entire pandemic was shut down, and we never were, our governor never closed our state. And so we saw a lot of drive market visitation, but we also saw, as I mentioned earlier, Phoenix being the fastest growing metropolitan in the nation, adding 250 people a day, from places like California and the Pacific Northwest and Texas. And so all those people are coming from places that aren't here, that are now living here and coming up to visit us. So it's our own Arizona residents that we also need to educate. And we partner very closely with the Arizona Office of Tourism as part of the whole statewide, you know, tourism industry and ecosystem. Their Appreciate AZ campaign as well. They actually handed out trash bags during the height of the pandemic because our trash problem literally was horrific. I have become a trash man. I can now add that to my job description. I've put trash collection at Dry Creek Trailhead here in Sedona, one of our much loved trails. I've actually put porta potty toilets on our Soldier Pass trailhead because it needed it as well. So things I never thought I would claim, but hey, happy to do it if it helps to solve the problem. But it's not a long-term solution. It's not a long-term solution.
Sure. So let's talk about the long-term solutions a little bit. Like, I know, obviously, you can't proactively recruit visitors right now. So you can't reach out to potential visitors and try to educate them. I'm sure you can put information on your website and reach them that way. But how are you essentially doing that education marketing in destination? What are you doing in that way?
Well, like you said, I have all of my owned media platforms. So we do have our visitsedona.com. We have our Facebook page, Instagram. We do have an e-newsletter that folks who are planning a trip sign up to get that information. So all of that does reside there, and we're pushing it out there, our official visitor guide, which is interesting. You know, there were thoughts of like, will that printed guide go away as a tool for destinations? It has not. And with the demand we see, I don't think it will for us anytime soon. The interface at our visitor center, we were averaging 600 people a day over the Thanksgiving holiday weekend in there.
Wow.
We thought maybe that would go away as well with all the information available online, but it's increasing. So we're really not, to answer your question, honestly, outside of a very small Leave No Trace program in market that is geofenced when people kind of pop over that line and come into destination. And some specific to OHV ATV recreating responsibly in partnership with that Tread Lightly and what's called our ROC group, the Red Rock OHV Conservation Crew, which is 12 private businesses who are collecting 1% of their sales annually to give back to trail maintenance and enhancements and rider education. So that's probably less than $50,000 for the year. So I'm really handcuffed at the moment in my ability to try to affect behavior, which whether you liked it or not, wearing a mask, distancing 6 feet apart, became part of our lifestyle for almost 2 years and continues. You know, people are still wearing masks. So you can affect behavior with messaging and modeling that behavior. And right now I'm really handcuffed in my ability to be able to try to change that behavior because I'm not able to speak directly to those people.
Yeah, that's rough. I don't even, well, yeah.
I'll take the misery loves company. I'll take the empathy. How's that?
Okay. All right. There you go. So one of the questions I had, and I think you've kind of answered it, is this lack of proactive visitation marketing really has impacted you this year as far as actual visitation. In fact, it seems like Sedona's just brand name is strong enough that at least from a recruitment standpoint, you're not missing out. Or what do you think?
You know, we are on the map. Folks know about Sedona. So what we've seen, you know, what we hear from our lodging partners, as well as our retailers and restaurants, is that our typical visitor has changed. We have a very deep-rooted love of arts here. We have many art galleries. You know, part of our destination grew out of artists coming here and making it their home and the inspiration of the Red Rocks. So we have a very different customer today. That's continuing to evolve, and we are doing some research now on what is our visitor profile. What does this person look like today? Why are they coming? How long are they staying? What are they spending? It's not the same as our customer of yesteryear, and there aren't as many arts-focused visitors. So what does that mean for my 80-plus galleries and shops that before that was who kept them their life, gave them their lifeblood, right? So I do believe, again, this is why I think marketing gets a bad rap. So for example, we just initiated direct flight service from Phoenix Sky Harbor to Jackson Hole, Wyoming, another amazing outdoor recreation destination and at another gateway entrance to Yellowstone National Park, very comparable to us. Mm-hmm. They value and protect and respect their outdoors. They are great travelers, spenders, a terrific visitor profile for us as Sedona to target to come here. And now we've just provided them with direct flight service to our major airport. Mm-hmm. We also, by the way, have three amazing Sedona artists who have galleries in Jackson Hole who are inspired by our Red Rocks and folks who love that art. Why wouldn't we want to say to them, you love this art that you see in these galleries in your home, come to ours to see it for yourself.
Right.
But I'm not allowed to do that. I'm not allowed to do that. So I think there is definitely still a need to market. And that goes with also our business travel will be one of the last bastions to come back. We, with our opening of our borders on November 8th and then the Omicron variant over Thanksgiving, we saw the immediate, you know, restrictions put back on some international travel. So it is very tenuous, which is a lot of our group travel to our national parks. We see a lot of international visitors who are coming to the Grand Canyon. So there are some areas that to just communicate to them where we are and being able to handle their visitation. Again, not able to market to them. So I hope that that will change. It's all about trust. I think the tourism industry, there's some lack of trust between public entities that fund us at times because of residents' outcry with the tension on infrastructure and who we are and what we do, that it's just more about, I just want heads and beds, right? Mm-hmm. More is better. Mm-hmm. More is better. And I think that today the world has changed, that it's not about more. It's about the right person at the right time who respects the place. And so marketing still has a role to be played. And I hope that we can get to that in the future with our partners.
Yeah. Well, and if you don't focus on, you know, visitors respecting the place, then it sounds like you won't have the same place for visitors to come and enjoy. So that in a way that makes sense to me.
Yes, ma'am.
Yep.
I just keep going back to that holiday party analogy you gave earlier. I feel like
Ollie Ollie oxen free, come on down. Party at my house.
Yeah, party in Sedona.
Party in Sedona. Come on down.
Even without the announcement, they're coming.
Yes, I know. They're making their own party. So they're just moving into my house and making a party, and I got nothing to say about it. Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure how much you want to get into this, but I'm curious, what kind of conversations have you had with the public since you've been there and with your chamber and their representatives about what all this could mean long term and this targeted type of visitor that really would be healthier long term? How have those conversations gone? What has that been like?
The greater Sedona community is very politically charged. And as we've seen nationally, politics is making productive conversation difficult. We still continue to pace ahead of 2019 in our visitation. So we don't even compare to 20. We look everything back to 2019. Mm-hmm. And so the ability to have the productive conversations with when we get to what will be potentially our new normal while we're still living in the throes of dealing with too many people here at times in our high peak season, it's not one that's really moving forward. I am hoping with the new year, we begin conversations around our new fiscal year, which will begin July 1 of 2022, that we have hopefully through what we've done to date with Leave No Trace and Tread Lightly and our Sedona Cares Pledge and this new Soul of Sedona concept that we've just created a film about in conjunction with our DNA as an outdoor recreation destination, an arts and culture destination, and a spiritual health and well-being destination that we'll be launching after the new year. Again, only on our own assets, but that will help our residents see the types of communications that we want to put out. That it's not just about come here, come right now, come all the time. That it's, we know you're coming here, please respect this place. And that down that path, we'll also have the opportunity to say, here's really some some targeted marketing for times when we do still need help, or a visitor that does more align with our DNA as a destination, as opposed to taking anyone and everyone who sees us on Instagram and decides to show up.
Sure.
So it's a slow process. I watched Titanic over the Thanksgiving weekend because it was running on loop on one of the streaming things. And so we're trying to move the Titanic here, I think. It's funny, I found some newspaper articles in my office from 1960, which was before Sedona was a city, and traffic was still a problem, you know, back in the 60s and 70s. And when you have one road in and one road out, you're going to have traffic. So I hope with the new year, there are some new programs as well launching. For example, we'll have our first public transit system in the city of Sedona ever.
Wow.
With one road in, one road out. Like 2022, we'll have our first public transit system. So this will address our trailhead congestion. It's going to go to 5 of our major trailheads, encourage park and ride, and get folks to take the shuttle. So that's a tremendous program. We're also looking at our entire Red Rock District, which is of our Coconino National Forest as a whole. Because COVID also made us very reactionary. We call it the whack-a-mole game here in Sedona, that our designated dispersed camping that's been abused and social trails that have come up out of that because people weren't respectful of how and, you know, what you do when you camp on our Forest Service lands. So now we have an emergency closure to address those damage to our landscape. And so we're managing that situation. So all of these things, hopefully in the new year, are going to start to bear some fruit because they've been worked on arduently by so many community stakeholders and community leaders and residents. And we'll just now, like I said, hopefully bear some fruit that people then can see that we are working to make things better and to manage the situation that we've been handed. So.
For sure. Sorry. Do you have something, Sasha?
No, I was going to say, I just keep thinking about what you mentioned a little while ago, Candace, that your trailheads, 5 of your major trailheads are right in residential suburbs and areas. And I can see just how important that need is to take care of of the land and have responsible visitation. I think that's unique to a lot of destinations as far as the trailheads being that close to residential areas.
Sedona should have been a national park. But what happened is because we have the very lush Oak Creek running through our city, there was a water source. And so people settled here. Mm-hmm. I mean, we grew wines in Sedona. We grew apples. We have pecans. Mm-hmm. So a very agricultural background. Our Sedona Heritage Museum really speaks to that. That kind of came before our Hollywood Western era. But that brought people here who settled, and that is why we're now people amongst what in other places is a national park.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting case study. We actually had a delegation from the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia come about a month ago, and they've come a couple times over the past 3 or 4 years. They're building a tourism destination in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, which just opened to tourism in 2019 for the first time ever. And they're building it from the ground up because they have these amazing ruins and just a tremendous vision. But my point is they think Sedona is a sister city because they're also building their community in and amongst these natural assets. And so how are we providing for housing and a diverse community socially, economically, culturally? How are we providing transportation that's friendly to the environment and allows people to get about? What are we doing in our tourism offering that speaks to that sustainability? What are the different type of outdoor recreation place consumers, and how are they working together or not, and how are we providing for that? And so they're trying to take our best practices and learn from our failures, which, you know, nobody's perfect, so we all have plenty to look at and grow from. But I just think that's so fascinating because we really are unique in that aspect. There are other mm-hmm. outdoor recreation destinations that are experiencing the onslaught of visitation. Sure. However, this lack of any buffer and just complete integration of society yeah. with our public lands is fascinating.
Yeah, you know? It is. It is.
So you brought up a good point. Saudi Arabia is trying to learn from you. I think other destinations like yours, I know we've talked to the former tourism director of Moab, and she's been yes. dealing with very similar sorts of things, and she's now a client of ours at another destination. But what have you seen and learned in at least the last few months in Sedona that other destinations who might be dealing with similar over tourism could kind of learn from what you've seen so far?
Well, Josh, to answer your question, you know, with respect to what other destinations can take away with how we've dealt with where we are right now, I would say it's the public-private nonprofit model, because you can't go it alone. You as a destination management organization or whatever you want to call yourself, you can't do it by yourself or in a vacuum. And where our greatest successes have come, if, for example, with our Sedona Trail Keepers program, our Red Rock OHV Conservation Crew program, our Fly Friendly agreement with our airport and our helicopter tour operators, all of these are getting stakeholders together from local government, private industry, and nonprofits that are focused in that scope area to address the issue and come up with innovative solutions. So I think our most recent one with our OHVs and the gal at Moab, I do know her, formerly of Moab. She and I talk often. Again, we love to commiserate. Misery loves company. So here were 12 businesses in Sedona that are OHV ATV companies. We work directly with the U.S. Forest Service, but then we also bring in the city of Sedona, the Yavapai County Sheriff, because much of our recreating on OHVs is out on what we call our 525 in our national forest that's outside of city limits. We have Arizona State Parks. We have Arizona Fish and Game. We have our grazing family that lives out on those lands that runs cattle still, speaking to our agricultural background and present livelihood as well for many in our state. And it's convening all of those groups together and saying, okay, we see the problem now. What can we do as a solution? So our private industry is collecting 1% of sales, of all sales annually, to go for trail maintenance, trail improvements, rider education, hopefully increased signage, and also just communicating amongst ourselves of what is being done. Also a volunteer, a formal volunteer ambassador program with the Forest Service to highly trafficked routes on our trails do pop-ups on busy weekends. So for example, our first on Indigenous Peoples Weekend, formerly Columbus Day Weekend, we had two different pop-ups on our two largest kind of pain points of OHV ATV recreation use, where a lot of bad behavior happens, that were staffed by these 12 industry partners and their employees to really talk where the rubber hits the road on the trail about how to behave and what to expect and what we expect of you, so that we could decrease that conflict. And this is really a winning model for us and one that we'll continue to propagate as we address other issues moving forward.
No, that's awesome. I do think it's important for everybody to work together and not just rely on one organization like yourself to figure it out when everybody's dealing with it. But it is your fault though, right, Candace?
Yes. I will say the target does reside on my back half the time. The other half it is on the city's back as well. So, we were, again, talking in prep to start the podcast, and I worked for Nancy Kerrigan's husband, formerly agent and then became husband. And I don't know if any of you have seen the documentary, the Tonya Harding documentary. It's really actually heartfelt and makes you feel for her. But she says it, you know, very eloquently. The media needs an enemy, right? They need a bad guy. And so somebody always needs someone to blame for what's going on. And by default, unfortunately, we take that role a lot. And yeah. So I try to just recognize that it's not personal against my organization. It's human nature, I think. Makes us feel better if we have somebody to take the blame for what's going on and put that blame on. But we just continually need to tell our story of how we're providing solutions to the challenges that our community faces, and that we're not Darth Vader, for lack of a better term.
Right. Well, I personally wish the best for Sedona. I loved it. One of my favorite places I've visited in the last 5 years or so. And I definitely want to see it taken care of.
Well, you know, you're welcome back anytime.
Well, I will try. I will contribute to the problem. I will be a responsible visitor.
Thank you.
Yes.
Appreciate that.
Well, thanks for your time, Candace. I really appreciate it. And yeah. I think that's it. Yeah.
Thanks for
yeah.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it was so nice to learn from you today.
So, Sasha, can you tell our listeners where else they can follow this madness?
Yes, you can find us on TikTok and LinkedIn and Instagram.
Nice.
Yep.
Awesome.
Thanks everyone. So much.
Bye.
Thank you.